Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
We have a live audience of one. Shout out to Jared for joining us today. We're at Sunstone Studios. And I feel like a good anecdote to get this started is that I've just learned from Jared that the Albert Einstein once sent invitations to a party after it happened to see if anyone would happen to come back and time travel. So, listener, as you hear this, we're talking about, you know, all sorts of fun things happening in Milwaukee today.
Right, today
Sunstone Studios, grand opening, Busker Fest.
Right.
I hope you went to it because I don't know if you'll be able to time travel back to it after you hear this episode.
But if you can.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never know, though, right? Because they're probably there right now.
Contact us. You know, I don't know. If you get back from time traveling, reach out. We'll have you on the pod for sure.
get us in the comments. Let us know if you had time traveled to Friday, August 6th, Sunstone Studios Day for Busker Fest, or on Saturday or Sunday.
That's right.
This is Tuesday right now.
Well, anyway, I just thought I would start with some whimsy because, you know, Mac isn't with us today and he's usually the main purveyor of whimsy, so I'm trying to keep up.
That's right. Where is Mac?
He's on vacation.
Well, no. Today he's on vacation. On Tuesday, he'll be back.
Sure. If you want to be particular about it. Yeah. Yeah. He is on vacation. And good for him, right? It's summertime. We've been on a bit of a break from the podcast ourselves because we've been taking vacations.
Each one of us.
Yeah. David, talk about where you went recently.
Yeah. So we just got back from South Dakota. Drove all the way out to Rapid City to see Mount Rushmore, to hike through the Badlands, and to spend a little bit of time in Sioux Falls. And I got to tell you, Lindsay, the thing that really struck me about this trip was about the value and importance of having public art. Particularly in places like when you think about like Rushmore, right? Which is admittedly a sculpture carved by some problematic folks.
Of some possibly problematic folks.
the elder Borglum apparently had some real issues. But that's, I don't know.
Neither here nor there.
I don't know him. I'm not here to cancel him. I'm just saying that he might be a little bit problematic. But I mean, the fact that like our country, that is sort of a monument to the vast ideals of a country that may not be perfect, but is sort of continue to try to like perfect itself over time, I think was just really inspiring, at least for me, and to sort of see that was a time when our country could do big things. And I was sort of like, good job, taxes. Like I kept saying to my wife throughout the trip, like, good job, taxes. Another place we visited was the Dinosaur Museum in Rapid City, funded by the WPA. Good job, taxes. So, you know, like super fun. And God, like what a lovely time to also like hike through the Badlands and sort of see, these Martian landscapes that have, you know, taken 75 million years to form, like, and here I'm going to get real peak David right now, right? This idea that like, they have been here, they've been timeless, right? In time. And I think for us to sort of like, for me to sort of be placed in that spot, it really reminded me that like for the very impermanent time that we're here, that the only way that we as a person kind can ever get to that kind of sense of timelessness is by creating art that lasts beyond us.
Wow. Well, thank you for trusting you to come back from a vacation and have inspired some deep arts thoughts about it. Also, peak David and Tammy to go on a trip with no reservations anywhere. You took off in the car and you survived and weren't eaten by buffalo. So
we were not eaten by buffalo.
Really glad.
We didn't dehydrate ourselves and
that's all that matters.
Back. Yeah. But you were also on a break.
I was. I have less deep takeaways about it, but
nothing to say about the function of our nation's government.
Of our democracy from my time in DC. Yeah, that's right. I can't say that I do, but Yeah, I went to DC for a couple of weeks. I used to live there, and you know, during the pandemic, I hadn't been able to get back to visit friends. So I did not do a lot of typical DC things. I spent a lot of like really slow time, like, you know, spending days with friends, like eating good food and jamming, you know, picking up like violin, learning how to play harpsichord.
Jamming as in like music, jamming, not music, not jamming. Making jam.
Right? No, but. Right. Man, missed opportunity there. Really should have made some jam as well. Yeah. And went going to the beach, which as a Midwesterner have never really understood beach culture, but it was lovely to sit on a beach.
You haven't done the whole Bradford thing this summer?
I haven't. I think I got scared off of it because there are just so many people there last summer. Yeah. But anyway, it was really nice. 2 weeks was a nice long time away from work. And now we've been all trying to get back into it. And here we are.
Here we are.
We're back in it. We're recording a podcast again. So, yeah. Now what?
Well, you know, as we're doing this live podcast, you can see that this harebrained scheme is going just about as well as we had planned it. But why don't we bring in our guest?
Mac, come back. Just kidding. This seems like a good time to transition to bringing our guest in. That's perfect. Yes. Still waiting on Jared to heckle us from the audience. You got anything you want to add before we...
Freebird.
Okay. All right. Yep. Well, that'll be the transition music. I don't know if we have the rights for it, but we'll try. Anyway.
Is there a violin cover that maybe somebody could do a Freebird?
Somebody could. In any case... At this live recording today, we are really delighted to welcome Meg Strobel, who's the Director of Marketing and Community Engagement at Sculpture Milwaukee. So she's going to talk all about what Sculpture has been up to in 2021 and 2020, their collaboration with the folks at Downtown for Busker Fest this past weekend. Hope you went. But Meg has a background in filmmaking and photography herself and a passion for public art and the city of Milwaukee, which she has called home for almost 15 years. She lives in a Cream City brick building in Walker's Point with her fiance, Andrew, and their 70 houseplants. So,
70.
After the break, Meg Strobel. Hey, Meg, thank you so much for being here.
The break over?
The break is over. We've never done this succession of the intro and the interview before, so, you know, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've always wanted to be on a podcast, and look, dreams come true in Milwaukee, you know?
In the pre-show hang, I shared with Meg that I'm glad that at Imagine MKE we can fulfill dreams of, you know, this level, right? If you want to be on a podcast, we can help you do it. So welcome. 70 houseplants. Do you have like an inventory, by the way?
I don't have an inventory, but I keep careful track every day. I look at each of my little plant babies, check in on everybody, you know, make sure their leaves are spry and happy. And yeah, it's a passion of mine, I would say.
Has this been a growing pandemic interest to keep adding plants, or have you always been such an avid...
You know, during the pandemic, I actually did not acquire very many new plants because I moved into a new space. Mm-hmm. And so I had light problems. This is such a plant mom problem, but I had south-facing windows in my old spot. Yeah. And so I was just trying to make everybody excited and, you know, alive in the new place. So it was a lot of, you know, plant Jenga sort of moving things around.
Yeah.
But everybody's happy now. Everybody's good.
I love it. That's a lot to maintain. Oh, my gosh. I'm impressed. I only have like 15.
That seems that's pretty good.
That
actually
seems like a lot at times.
Maybe we could do like a little propagation party sometime.
Yeah.
Bring me a clipping.
I will.
Yes.
I will.
Okay. I would love that.
Backdoor pilot to a new pod. Clippings.
Plants.
Clippings. Clippings. Imagine clippings.
Anyway.
Propagation.
That's right.
Keep it together, guys.
Yeah, if you can't tell, this is our first time back in a month. So, Meg, can you tell us about a formative arts and cultural experience that left a strong imprint on you?
There are So many. I mean, I think the arts obviously are they're very moving to me and a really big part of my life. So I guess I'll share an early memory, which was the first time I ever had an opportunity to see a Broadway style show. I was 5 or 6, I don't remember exactly, but my aunt and my mom took me on the train. I got to take my first train ride on the Amtrak, so I thought I was going to someplace magical. Turned out it was Chicago, and it's a Milwaukee joke.
You're like, not magical at all.
No, Chicago's lovely. Acknowledgement to our sister city. But anyways, when we got there and we got to the show, it was so magical. You know, people are singing and walls are moving and things are changing. And I just sort of became obsessed with knowing how it worked. So it sort of sent me down on this rabbit hole of wanting to learn more about theater and live performance. And it was The Secret Garden was the show, late 80s, early 90s. So it was really, really magical. And I think I've carried that sort of passion for performance with me, fostered by my aunts and my mom, who are very into the arts as well. So it was great.
So tell us more. After that experience, did you then growing up have the opportunity to be in some shows or learn some dance, or where did that take you?
Yes. So all through school, I was always in the shows in middle school and high school. And thankfully, I grew up in a small town, so there wasn't really a lot of competition for the lead. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure. It's a little too humble. You were lead material. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Lindsay. Bless. One of my favorite roles actually was, I don't want to say it was typecasting, but I was cast as Glinda the Good Witch in our high school production of The Wizard of Oz. I think that was probably my peak. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been really fun to be able to incorporate the skills that you learn in that type of environment in the theater, to being able to do public speaking. And I do a lot for, of course, Sculpture Milwaukee, just being able to communicate really well. And I think that that certainly was helpful to me foundationally.
Mm. That's awesome.
So did you grow up in Milwaukee, or did you grow up outside of Milwaukee?
I grew up in Menasha, Wisconsin. Sure. Yeah. Oh, did you say, oh, sure?
Yeah.
Where's
that?
They
make paper up there?
They do make, they used to make a lot of things up there.
Used to.
Well, isn't that true for a lot of the sort of north, it's north, central, northeast?
Yes. Wisconsin? So Lake Winnebago, it's visible. Like, it's like one of the biggest freshwater lakes. And we were right on the shores of Lake Winnebago. And I grew up there until I was 18 and jumped ship, kind of made it to Milwaukee. And I just love it here. So I haven't left.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of is a good transition. You made it to Milwaukee to come for film school, right?
Yes.
So you went to UWM for film school, and then your backgrounds included some film production, videography, photography, et cetera. Tell us a little bit more about that journey and what some of your personal professional paths before sculpture were.
Sure. Yeah. So I was the first person in my family to go to college, which was really exciting. But then I had to tell my dad that I was going to get an art degree. And he said, honey, business. Have you heard of business? Maybe we could try business.
Yeah.
It just, I think anyone who finds themselves in the art field has a strong passion for it. And just this belief that you can make it. And so I'm very, very grateful for the path that I was on. Studying at UWM was a huge, huge pleasure. The film school there is sneaky terrific.
It's top 10, I hear.
Yeah, top 10. Go Panthers. So during my time there, I really did a lot with experimental filmmaking and documentary. And really, being a filmmaker is just solving a bunch of problems all of the time, which turns out to apply to pretty much any career, especially a career at a nonprofit. So it's been a really good transition.
You know, I often said that, like, if I had known, so I had studied film also in college, right? And so had I known that, like, Milwaukee had a top 10 film school, growing up in San Francisco, like, I literally thought there were only three places to go, right? And NYU, UCLA, USC. Had no idea that there were other places. And I think this is one of those, this is one of the parts of the story of our city that's so important, right? That we have a top 10 film school here in Milwaukee, a growing sort of film infrastructure with Milwaukee Film and some of the other production companies that are doing work here. I mean, it would be incredible, right, for 18-year-old or 21-year-old David to, you know, have come to Milwaukee to study film and then to sort of like get into the system here. It's a story that we, even the folks in the arts community, don't hear about. And I think it's just such a, I think it underlines all the great stuff that we have, right? Which is super cool.
Don't sleep on Milwaukee. Correct. Like, it is, yes, legit. I totally understand. I totally agree with what you're saying, because even when I was doing research about, you know, thinking that I maybe wanted to explore film, which was kind of a shocker for me too, because I didn't really have a past with it. Like, we didn't have a video camera growing up. I didn't have kind of that experience of doing it. But I took a film studies class and I started to really just get so intrigued by it, and I couldn't stop. So I was like, oh yeah, this is what I have to do. And then I found out Milwaukee was top 10. I was like, my Milwaukee? Okay.
And great, good, then I'm here.
I was like, this is fabulous. Yeah. So yeah, and it's really wonderful because the school has had such amazing success. Many of my classmates are in the industry doing incredibly well, making incredible things, and it's just fun to see that growth.
You know, I think, and I know we have a whole list of questions for you, but now I'm super interested, right? Like, one of the key, I think, infrastructural questions that we've been asked here at Imagine, right, is that, like, we have a top 10 film school. We have all of this great theater stuff, right, coming for kids who are going through, whether it's MIAD, whether it's GWM, and they graduate, and then it feels like there aren't a whole lot of places for them to plug in, right? And if they do, it's potentially in corollary fields or whatever, but there's not like a feeder into like this middle class of production here in Milwaukee. And so, you know, as somebody who has sort of like experienced that and now is, you know, doing a corollary job in a nonprofit that's not necessarily film related, what was your experience like coming out of the system and sort of like trying to figure out like how you kind of make it right in our city?
Yeah. So, I was very fortunate at UWM. They have kind of a incubator, DocuWM, that does a lot of really incredible work with documentary film. So after my graduation, I was able, one of our films, actually aired on PBS and, did really well. So I was able to kind of travel with that film a little bit and get some experience and try to, you know, network my way into my next thing. And I started to do, you know, like archival research for documentaries. That's a really fun thing. I mean, it's like nerd style, but I'm a cool person. I'm like, be cool, Meg. Oh my God, what are you talking about? Don't tell him you're in the archives. Okay. Anyways, so I actually then was able to pivot a little bit, and I started to do still photography. So I got a great internship with a fashion photographer, and that was really a mind meld, because I had this sort of experience of like the cinema verite and just, you know, collecting images and kind of having that documentary background. But then when you introduce the world of fashion, it's just like, oh, I can make this so much more beautiful. I can give this so much more life. And that was a really, really powerful kind of catalyst for me. And then I was able to do freelance. I did freelance work for years. Got kind of specialized in jewelry. I specialize in diamonds and reflective metals. So that's a fun, like, little thing to do.
What are some things you had to learn to specialize in that? Like, what are some weird problems you have to solve that people, like, the average person might not think about?
All right. Think about a gold band, like a simple gold band. Honey, that is a round mirror. Okay. How are you going to take a picture of that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was really just about, and then you could get things to look too perfect where you get into this world where it just looks like a CAD image, or it doesn't have the life of a photo. Yeah. So I would say, it was really about finding that balance between having something that looks real and beautiful and has some reflections and some light. I don't know. I could talk about it at length, but it's fun. I'll just give you the 2-minute version. Yeah.
So it seemed like, you know, you come out with these technical skills, but you're able to apply them in a bunch of different artistic areas, solving problems that sort of, and I think that, so I had shared with you previously that we're doing a little bit of a business sector research. And one of the questions we've asked, right, our business leaders here in town is, If creativity is so important to your to the work that you do, why aren't you hiring more creative people, right? And I think the sort of feeling is that like creative people may not have the technical skills to sort of do the work that these companies are asking for. And I think our hope is that is to be able to dispel some of that I think myth that like creative folks are actually, to your point, right, the folks who are actually solving problems, right? And like solving creative problems or solving technical problems are like all, they're all sort of interrelated. And if you have somebody who's creative and has great creative skills, they can do anything.
It's true.
Ha, yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
So we just got to prove that to like a few corporations and also Meg's dad.
He's on board now.
He's on board now, right?
That's
right.
Great. He's my biggest fan.
Oh, that's
like,
awesome.
You know, about 10 years later, he was like, all right.
This worked out okay.
Yeah. I was very skeptical for those first years, but okay. you have a house? Okay, you're fine. Yeah. You're eating? Okay, you're good.
So that's a great transition, actually. That all of that took you now to your work and your role at Sculpture, which you've been in, I think, coming up on 2 years, right?
Coming up on 2 years. Started in December of 2019.
Yeah.
So the job.
It's a fun time to start a job.
Well, it was for
it
a
was
while.
For a few months. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Something I love about like recorded media is I'll get to listen back to this in like 10 years, and I'll be like, "What was so bad in 2020? Oh.
That's really a hopeful vision for our memory in 10 years.
Yes,
like that.
In 10 years we'll be laughing. Yeah, mask free.
No more pandemics.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes,
that's
it'll right. all be okay. But I started in December 2019 and was really excited to make this transition in my career because I am very passionate about the city of Milwaukee. It is my chosen home. I love it here, and I really love public art. So, of course, I noticed, you know, sculptures starting to pop up in 2017, and I was like, this is really cool, but I have so many questions. Like, where are the sculptures coming from, and who's supporting the sculptures, and like,
if how? Only there was someone to communicate about it.
If only someone would know. So, I actually went to the Marcus Corporation does this really cool. I think it's called Round Table or On the Table. On the Table is the name of it. But they invite people just from the community and different groups to go to a literal table and just to talk to people about things they're interested in. And I found out there was a public art table, and I was like, da da da, all the questions. Like, let's talk about this. And at the end of the conversation, I ended up meeting an executive from Sculpture Milwaukee, and we had this amazing conversation. And he said, well, have you thought about, you know, working in public art? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I have a job. I don't know. But the more I thought about the opportunity, the more I thought this is an incredible way for me to serve my community and to bring my passion into a program that I really believe is uplifting our city. So I'm so, so thrilled to be on board. And as we, you know, round the corner into year two and beyond, we've had some challenges, but we've really been able to pivot, and we've been very, very lucky because Sculpture Milwaukee is an outdoor exhibition. So the Milwaukee Record gave us a shout out the other day, and they called us pandemic proof fun. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's it's right. So true. Because I remember, you know, when this shenanigan started, I would take my like daily sad quarantine walks, but they weren't so sad because I would go and see the sculptures and, you know, your emotions when you see different pieces, you connect with it in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I really got to know each of the sculptures in a great way, and having that, you know, the time with each piece has really been informative and special. So yeah, there's always a silver lining. Well, almost always.
Yeah. So talk to us about, so in 2020, obviously you already had plans underway for what sculptures would come in, and that season was programmed a bit. Some of those pieces have stuck around. Like how did then knowing we were in the middle of a pandemic affect some of the choices that you made for 2021?
Sure. So in 2020, as you mentioned, we had our set list. We were ready to go. But then I got to learn a lot about international art shipping. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they were prioritizing medical supplies. And of course, fine art wasn't shipping. Of course, that makes sense. So we really had to pivot and think, what can we do? What sculptures can we get? How can we make this work? So again, into creative problem solving, we were very, very fortunate to have a team that could put together this incredible exhibition. And of course, we always had a traditional schedule of June through October. New sculptures go in June. thing come out in October. But if you're in a pandemic, you might not be able to get your sculptures in by June. So that's what happened indeed. But it was cool because we kind of got to slowly roll the sculptures out. And then I would say by about August, all of the sculptures were in place. And it was wonderful because people could go for walks and they could experience the art and they could see something different and new to make the city feel alive in sort of a dark time.
So you've clearly underlined why the work of sculpture, but also moreover, sort of more generally, the importance of public art, particularly outdoor public art, last year. But can you talk just a little bit about why? I think because you told the story earlier about the two business folks seeing the Big Blue Blob sculpture. Like, I think we often hear when people experience public art that there's like, well, it's in the public, everybody's got to love it, right? Like. But that's not actually true, right? So can you talk a little bit about why public art is just so important in the context of like being able to like, I guess, kind of like engage, right, the communities and how it sort of is reflective of a community's voice or, you know, like why is it so important?
Why? Okay, that's a really big question. And I think it just comes down to starting conversations in our community. Each of our pieces is made by a different artist and who has their own unique voice and their own unique practice. And so when we place these objects in the public sphere, we're kind of just giving them to the city to experience them as they want to experience them. And, you know, we don't necessarily need to provide answers. We hope that the artwork generates questions and generates interest. And, you know, there's many ways to experience a sculpture. You can stop and take a look at it and say, oh, cool. You can, you know, read the description and think a little bit about maybe what the artist was thinking. And you can try to make connections. And I think what's special about sculpture as a medium is that you have that duration of time. So for a local person who experiences the artwork at different times, you can have a different experience with a different sculpture every day, which I think is tremendously valuable. But then we also want to use it as a driver for tourism. And it's really special, actually, right now in Milwaukee. Again, you may have to time travel. But actually, this weekend is the big triathlon down by the lakefront. And so we've had this huge influx of people in our downtown, very fit people running our sculpture route. It's super cool. And they might only see the sculptures one time and they might be running pretty fast past it. Yeah. But it enlivens the space in a way that's kind of hard to describe. But it adds so much to our city and so much value. And I hope when people are, you know, running by or biking by, they have this moment where they're like, oh, Milwaukee, don't sleep on Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. This place is really cool. It's a placemaking tool for sure.
I'm curious for more of the local engagement with the sculptures. If there's been one where you maybe didn't think it was gonna like spark such a conversation. Like, I mean, you kind of hope that everything will have an impact and will spur attention. But I'm just curious if there's ever been one where you're like, well, I didn't expect that reaction to happen. Like, if not, that's okay too. But
right. So right. Like, I'm always reminded of the blue shirt argument, right, at the airport, right, and every few months somebody brings up, well, there was that time when that blue shirt thing happened.
Wait, catch me up.
I only know the outlines of the story and how that's one of the reasons why we have no public funding for the arts.
Yeah, it was a big blue shirt. It's like this controversy that I actually don't even really know if I know all the outlines on it.
What year was this?
This is Scott Walker was the county executive at the time, mm-hmm. and there was like an installation, this big installation of the blue shirt at the
Who
airport.
Who was the artist? The artist was incredible.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
very
yeah.
well known. Oh.
Was it a plain blue shirt? I have so many questions. I should know this story by now.
Yeah. So I think but I think that this goes back to this question of like, I wonder, and this is a little bit like armchair psychology for our community, right? But that there's this feeling of like upper Midwest, like we don't like conflict. And so when there is a piece of art, all great art provokes something, right? Whether it's joy, inspiration, whatever it is, or different feelings, that it sort of brings people's sense of like not being Midwestern nice to each other, and that makes people feel a little bit weird. That's sort of my take on it. But like, I think I mean, the story you told about the blah, blah, blah conversation was exactly right, right? One person being like, this is an abomination. The other person like, that's pretty cool, right? Like, that's kind of like the kind of engagement we, that seems like it's, mm-hmm. it should be encouraged, right? Is that like the sense of like being able to be together in an experience?
Yes. And actually, as you were talking, I thought of our big red solo cup mm-hmm. that we have in the historic Third Ward right now. Mm-hmm. It's by a Chicago-based artist. Her name's Paula Crown. And her practice is really about the environment. Mm-hmm. But essentially, what Sculpture Milwaukee has done is we chose the Third Ward as this great location because our Third Ward does have so much restaurant industry, so much foot traffic, so much activity. And we put this, I think it's like 12 feet. Of course, I don't remember the dimensions. You can find out all the information on sculpturemilwaukee.com. But I want to say it's about 12 feet. And it's very large. And, you know, people are actually invited to step into the cup mm-hmm. and kind of have their photos taken. But it has generated a bit of controversy because there's people who see it and they're like, well, actually, so the name of the piece to describe it further, since we don't have the benefit of showing a visual, but think of a solo cup, any solo cup that you've ever gotten at any party ever. And the work is crushed a little bit and then it's on its side. So it looks like a piece of garbage right. because it's supposed to. That's what the artist yeah. had in mind. Yeah. Yeah. And she's really interested in single-use plastics. So the sculpture has this really right. incredible mm-hmm. story to tell. But when you talk to some people about it, they're like, I just don't know why they put that big red cup out there. Like, it doesn't look
this
like
isn't a frat party.
Yeah, exactly. But it has this incredible meaning behind it. So I think it's like you can have your initial reaction, whatever that is, positive, negative, mm-hmm. delight, you know, confusion, whatever your first, your gut is on it. And then the more you learn about it, I think the more you start to appreciate, oh my gosh, you know, did I use a solo cup at the last party that I was at? Like mm-hmm. the next time someone tries to hand me like a solo cup, am I leaving a legacy of plastic for my great, great, great grandchildren? Mm-hmm. This thing's going to be around for 500 years. Uh-huh. Like, so Paula Crown's work has helped me to really think about single-use plastics. And I think that's an amazing conversation to start in a freshwater city like Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
So something else that might provoke conversation in a different way is Busker Fest, right? Which again, we're talking about something that we hope the listeners went to. But tell us more about the process of getting this up and going with downtown folks. Have you had the opportunity to do something quite like this before where like musicians are paired with sculptures? Like share more.
Sure. So yeah. Busker Fest, essentially what it is we have 6 sculpture locations and then we have over 60 unique artists that are going to be performing at these locations. So,
just a few. That's
yeah, it's kind of a lot. Crazy. Yeah. Yeah. It's very ambitious. Mm-hmm. And we've been at it for over an hour now. It's happening just outside our doors as we speak. Mm-hmm. And so far, so great. I got to experience 3 incredible performances this morning. I had Roxy Bean playing at the Bronze Funds. We've got this incredible sculpture by Neri Ward. It's called Apollo Pole. And so it looks like the Apollo sign in New York. And it's planted right in the heart of downtown, right in front of our Wisconsin Center District. And there was an African dance and drumming group there. Amazing. Wow. And so yeah. fun to see people dancing and just really enjoying that and making the space feel so alive. I got to see, we have Dan Peterman's Love Podium, which is a really cool sculpture, by the by. You're going to have to check it out.
I haven't seen that one
yet. It's by the Avenue, and it actually looks like a podium, like a lectern that you would see at any sort of place where you would find a lectern. Okay, great.
But you gotta go see it.
But it's actually so it's called Love Podium. So it's like two lecterns that face opposite ways. So I think it's very timely. You know, we have people with different opinions, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. letting people speak their piece, I think, is really the heart of Dan Peterman's work. But there was an amazing singer-songwriter right outside who was just like enlivening that space. Later this weekend, we're going to have poets, musicians, like magicians, like all of the things. We have a piece by Sarah Greenberger Rafferty. She was very inspired by the work of Harry Houdini. So her piece is called After Harry. And we're going to have magicians out there. Like, what an amazing thing to be able to give to people at this time, because at this moment, we're on the pandemic roller coaster,
yep,
and there's been some twists and turns. Yeah. And what's so lucky for us is that we are able to be outside. So we can keep our distance because we have all of downtown as our playground. We can keep people safe because, you know, being outside is just like less chance of transmission. And it's just really such a special gift to be able to give to people, and working with Milwaukee Downtown to get it started, and working with Book Live to get the musicians together.
Not the magicians, probably, through Book Live.
Yes, we did do a open call so people could apply for these things, and we were so thrilled with the diversity of performers that we got back because it's every genre. We've got a Johnny Cash cover band. We've got R&B. We've got singer-songwriters that are doing their own unique sets. Acoustic performers, electric performers, like everywhere in the middle. There's a harp player, like there's rappers, like, and it's all just every free genre. For people to, like, as they mosey downtown, to just sort of be intervened. If you make an intentional effort to come to Busker Fest, that is perfect. We love to see it. Please come down. But if you're also just happen to be downtown, you'll have this lovely intervention in your day. So I think it's a huge win-win.
This is a bit of a leading question because I know that Imagine was not as involved, but a little bit involved in the project and in some conversations and in the panel selecting the musicians and whatnot. But I can imagine how much work putting together something of this scale is. What is it like to how does working with partners on something like this help? I think keep the momentum up in something that's not simple, that you know is going to have this great impact for the city, but is going to require a lot of work. Like, how does the partnership help?
So we started months ago, and it's always fun when you plan a project of this scale because you're like, oh, it's in August. Let's have so much time to plan that. And then, like, you know, a month ago, I was like, oh my gosh, it's in a month. And then, like, 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh my God, it's right around the corner. Yep. And yesterday, I was like,
how did we get here?
So the duration of time and getting started early was huge, but we just really did have an incredible team. Everybody that put this together has their own expertise. Of course, we were able to hopefully create positive connections in choosing the performers to be by the right sculptures. We wanted there to be some nice synergy there, so I could always offer insight on that. We have Gabriel Yeager from Milwaukee Downtown, who just knows the city. So he's like, oh yeah, I know so-and-so over there. And, you know, small Milwaukee starts to work for you. And we had Antoine from your team, who was just so, like, has such a great energy that, like, he would always kind of keep us on track and just kind of be like, oh, did we ever think about it this way? And it was a really actually positive planning process. You know, if you like meetings, you know, join a nonprofit.
That is our primary export, so...
That's right.
Yeah. That's lovely. Yeah, shout out to Gabe for...
Friend of the pod.
Calling me right now.
Gabe is calling you right now.
Calling me right now.
Do you want to pause and answer?
No. Okay. He's on his own out there now.
You're like, Gabe, I'm when here. You listen to this, come back in time and call in on the pod.
I was about to give him a nice shout out, but no, why is he calling you?
You know what? Something might be.
deal with the problem on your own, Gabe.
No. I'll call him back directly.
He's probably like, why am I not on the pod?
Imagine. You should get him on the pod. Have you
he's been on, he's been on the pod a lot. He's a super good friend of the pod. And
all right. He could have his own show, though.
He could definitely have his own show.
Yeah.
He really could. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We would definitely be open to this.
There's an idea. Yeah. There's an idea. All right. Yeah, Meg, what show should you and Gabe host?
Oh my gosh, it would be the Downtown Minute.
Like, ooh, all right.
Yeah. Oh, we would have so much fun. So I think Gabe and I share this passion for public art in a big way. And of course, I work with sculpture primarily, but he works with murals and different artists and activations in different spaces. So we always try to connect and try to get the biggest lift for whatever the project is. So it's been so fun to see the murals that he's been able to get into place. And I don't know, we would definitely have like a very fun like public art podcast.
David, put it on the list.
David,
put it on the list. So, members of my team will know the sort of whenever they see that gleam in the eye, they're always a little bit like, uh oh.
Yeah. Yes, that's accurate.
Lizzie's like, how many meetings do I have to go for this? Like,
I don't know if listeners can hear, but it is really lovely to be in a space that's like, that's active with art all over. We can hear Jared in the background. I think there's going to be some spoken words soon. Just got to acknowledge how rare that is as of late.
Yeah. Congratulations, Sunstone.
Yeah.
Grand opening today. Very glad to be here.
I didn't tell you
one thing that I really wanted to talk about.
Let's hear it.
It was more about the pandemic pivot. So this year's exhibition for 2021 is incredible. We have two co-curators, Theaster Gates and Michelle Grabner, who have created a
Just some small names.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
We're so honored. And the works that they've selected are so beautiful. And we've been so, so fortunate because we were actually able to help in the fabrication of several of the works. So some of the works that you'll see on the streets are brand new, created for Sculpture Milwaukee. We have a work by Native American artist. His name's Brad Kalheimer. He's an incredible person. He used this new type of technique to create this aluminum dream catcher. It's on view in the Third Ward. We have a really cool piece that we helped to fabricate by a Chicago artist named Jason Pickleman. He's just a really cool cat and a really amazing designer. And so it was super fun to help his sculpture come to life. And I would love to see the trajectory of Sculpture Milwaukee to grow in such a way that we're able to really help artists to create new works and bring them into the world. I think that's a really fun part of something that's new for 2021.
You know, actually, I meant to say this earlier in the vacation chit-chat, but when we were in Sioux Falls, we, as I mentioned, we did the Sioux Falls Sculpture Walk. And, you know, as you were just talking, it reminded me of what I love about Sculpture Milwaukee is that, like, the sculptures aren't so dense together that, like, you can experience something and then walk a little bit to get to the next thing. Whereas in the Sculpture Walk in Sioux Falls, I mean, because the distance was three or four blocks, like everything is together. So you see a sculpture and you're like, oh, that's really cool. And then you take three steps and you see the next thing. And then it's almost like there's no breathing space. And I think there's something really magical about the path you all put together where you can kind of like have these experiences where the sculptures breathe and sort of like engage and sort of be with the thing until you get to the next thing. So congratulations on that. And for anybody who's listening, maybe you can't go back in time to experience Busker Fest. However, you can experience this year's Sculpture Milwaukee exhibit throughout the city, throughout downtown.
That's right. So this is actually the perfect place for a plug before we ask you one final question. So people can get out and see all of the things you've just been talking about right now, right?
Absolutely.
And where can they find the map and all the things?
There's no wrong way to Sculpture Milwaukee. You can experience one of our sculptures. You can put yourself on a self-guided tour. And what's great is all of the sculptures have a little gold stand next to them. And on that stand, you'll find a QR code where you can actually hear the artists talking about the work, which is super cool. We also have printed maps on site, or you can visit sculpturemilwaukee.com for more information. We have all kinds of great resources on there. We even have educational materials. So if educators are looking for ways to kind of fold some of the thematic elements from our show into the classroom, we've got great resources there. We have a book club where our artists recommend different books, and then people can kind of just get into the head of someone who's creating something. So if you're particularly interested in a work and want to know more about the process, you can see where the artist you know, maybe drew some inspiration from by checking out one of their books. Just so much information and so many fun ways to engage with Sculpture Milwaukee. So the best way to start is to go to sculpturemilwaukee.com. You can become a sculpture buff and support Sculpture Milwaukee. And if you do, you get free tours. I might even be your tour guide. Like, I mean, we have incredible docents who usually do the tours, but every once in a while, I just can't resist and I have to get out there.
Can people request you?
You can.
Hey, all right.
And you know what? If you become a sculpture buff for just $29, you know, maybe you'll have a little bit more pull, right? Like, oh, could happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I am glad to hear about all that. I did not know about the book club. I'm going to go check that out after this.
SculptureMilwaukee.com.
I will.
Okay, Meg, so bringing it all home, you may or may not know this, but here at Imagine MKE, we have the magical power. Not magical, it's actually a very real power to make our guests the arts and culture czar.
Very real.
The problem is that it only lasts for the time of the show. And so, Meg, as our city's arts and cultural czar, what are your proclamations?
People of Milwaukee. As your czar of all things arts and culture, I would like to announce my first policy, which will be a 2% fee for new developments that are coming into town. And they will, a lot of cities actually already have this, but it's a 1% usually. But I'm the czar now.
You're the czar now. It could be 5.
It could be 5. Could be 50%. No, I don't know that would fly. I don't really know. I know from things I know about politics, people hate it when you charge them. They just don't love it. So, you know, we dip a toe in, maybe 1-2%. But just to increase, so like if you have a development and you're moving your $5 million, $10 million, $50 million project to Milwaukee, you just have to spend 1% or 2% under my czarship on art. And I think that it would be such a beautiful way to kind of just increase the beauty in our community. We didn't really talk about beauty as being one of the special parts about Sculpture Milwaukee, but it really does help to beautify the landscape. So I would love to see that. I will also be raising your taxes because it's a good thing you're going to like it at the end. Like David was saying, go taxes, right?
Good job, taxes.
Good job, taxes. Oh my God, I'm never getting elected.
Well, you were appointed, yeah. So
continue. I was appointed.
Continue.
Yes. And I would also do tax cuts for major film productions. Mm. We had these tax cuts in Milwaukee, or in Wisconsin, rather, several years ago already. And it actually helped to increase the production, which would kind of go back into creating more of a pipeline for graduates from this incredible film school to be able to apply those skills on set. And I think that that would be just a fabulous way to do it. And it actually wouldn't cost anybody anything. It would just be a bit of a cut, right?
Yeah. It'd be a credit, right? It'd offset it would offset their production costs.
Okay. Let's try this again.
Oh no, you're good. Is there more?
You should have a minute.
Oh my gosh, I still have a minute. Yeah. Okay. Sculptures everywhere. Yeah. I would
everywhere.
Also, like, something that's lovely about our exhibition, and it has a lifespan, right? Things come and go, but all of the works are available for acquisition. So we're so thrilled when works get to kind of permanently live in Milwaukee. Mm. So I think if I could, I would probably just choose a few of my favorite works and things that I find particularly beautiful and meaningful and give them to the city of Milwaukee and have them just become a part of our permanent landscape.
God, I love it.
I don't think anyone's ever approached answering that with quite so much gusto. And now I think we need to go record it at the Love Podium.
Oh my gosh. Let's go.
Fantastic.
So yeah, I think as imagined, I think we would definitely, now that your reign has ended, unfortunately, I think I don't think I'm speaking out of school and saying that like we would join you in ensuring that there are more resources for the arts, that we need a more vibrant middle class of productions that's happening to be able to support all the great filmmaking talent. And I think to this other point of like, we were a city that had a percent for the arts program in our development projects that just disappeared a couple of years ago, right? Maybe it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Bring it back.
And we could just bring it back, and we could then become a much more vibrant and thriving Milwaukee powered by the arts. So thank you, Czarina, or former Czarina. We would love to have you back. Love to have your reign back.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna work on my speech a little bit, and I'll be back.
We're going out and recording at the podium later today.
Great.
Thank you so much, Meg. Have fun out at Busker Fest.
Thank you so much. There's always something happening in Milwaukee downtown. That's right. See you on the sculpture route.
That's right.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Meg, for joining us today at the Sunstone Studios grand opening and for our season 3 opener. And thank you, friends, for joining us and listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post it on social media, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org. We've got a lot of great episodes planned for season three, but if there is someone you'd like to hear from in Milwaukee's arts and culture world, please let us know by email or on the socials at imagine_MKE on Twitter and Insta, or on Facebook at imagine_MKE. Imagine This podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE podcast network. Thanks again, folks, and we will see you next Tuesday. Till then, till Tuesday, voices carry.